The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
He's planning to build a 90,000 square foot ballroom. That house there, that White House, is 55,000 square feet. So, right. I mean, he's got big plans. And to me, it says something about the difference between the first presidency and the second Trump presidency. The first Trump presidency kind of came and went. It was rather ephemeral in its effects on the country, despite what we all saw at the time. This one, he's making more radical changes to the country and to the White House that'll live well beyond his presidency.
Right. And I think part of it is because he now knows how government works. I think one of the things that really is the key difference between the first term and the second term is that he had a whole host of characters in the government that were trying to stymie his efforts to radically change the country. He's now surrounded by people that are fully supportive of his agenda and helping him do it.
Benefits, we've already kicked nearly 275,000 illegal aliens off of the Social Security system. These are people, many of them have already left the country, and yet we were sending them checks all the time. And 275,000, and that number is now even larger than that, Frank. It's an unbelievable job. And what that's doing is making the system strong.
You know, Donald Trump right now is the best known, most politically powerful, and I believe, I don't care what his critics say, the most popular person on the planet Earth right now. Everybody knows who he is and what he's doing, and the vast majority of them like him. I don't care what some of these crazy lefties may say here at home or elsewhere.
And I think everywhere President Trump goes, he's standing up, putting up, showing up, and speaking up. But in this case, he's basically there because he thinks, but for Biden, the war wouldn't have happened. And but for Trump, the war can't end.
Trump has set this up. He has framed this. He is a man of peace. Look at these deals. It's like Trump is nearly at peace with the rest of the world. Putin's not at peace with anybody right now. Nobody likes the guy. He's the evil guy. Trump's the good guy. I just love those odds. And I think Trump has just set this up so
yes, beautiful. Whether it's the streets of D.C.,
look at
the corridors of Capitol Hill.
Let's go there right now. Absolutely. Trump's laying down law and order in the streets of D.C. And even the liberals who live there admit, even the ones that don't like him, admit that crime's a problem.
He got about 4 or 5% of the vote there. I live
it's
there.
Another,
I live in the heart of D.C. I love it.
It's another big win for Trump. This is just a phenomenal win for Trump.
Hero.
This is just one of many things where the wind is at Trump's back.
You know, my father always used to tell me, I had a wonderful father, very smart, and he used to say, son, when you walk into a restaurant and you see a dirty front door, don't go in, because if the front door is dirty, the kitchen's dirty also. Same thing with the Capitol. If our Capitol's dirty, our whole country is dirty.
We're watching the greatest counter-revolution in some 90 years. We have not seen any president try to radically change the political calculus and the nature of government since FDR did it during the New Deal. Donald Trump is winning on all of these social and cultural issues. People are angry about this counter-revolution for two reasons. It's succeeding, and it's succeeding beyond anybody's wild expectations because it's working. There's another reason why they're angry. We're going to see in the next year a frenzy, a frantic, almost out of mind reaction from the left. Brace yourself. We're looking at the resistance coming up to the counter-revolution, and it's going to be fierce and unhinged.
The resistance to the resurgence, you could say as well. We're in the midst of an American resurgence, just as we talked about before Donald Trump even came back for his second term. And as you heard there, I mean, the wind is at his back and he's claiming victory after victory. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Final show of the week. That's hard to believe. You can email the show if you'd like to submit some feedback td@thetrumpet.com. Or if you go to the Rumble channel, you can leave us some feedback underneath the video there. Speaking of feedback underneath the video, I love that comment there about if the front door's dirty, the whole restaurant, the kitchen's dirty too. And Washington, D.C. is America's front door. I mean, what does it say about the rest of the nation? If crime is just left to go without any resistance, that's the way it's been for years. And the people of D.C. acknowledge it. You see more and more of these black residents. I mean, they vote 90% Democrat. And yet more and more of these videos are popping up on social media. It's great. I saw one this morning. The woman had her window down and she's at a stoplight in downtown D.C. And she's like, I've never felt more safe. That's not a bad thing, is it? Well, you listen to some of the talking heads and you would think that this is a curse to actually regain control of the streets of D.C., the front door to America. The comments underneath that video where he passes on some wise words from his father, Fred Trump. I mean, you don't even hear people talk about their father like that anymore. He was a great man, says Donald Trump. That's kind of touching in and of itself. But then he passes along the words of wisdom. If the door is dirty, if the front door is dirty or broken, stay away from the establishment. And then the comments underneath that video, that little clip. Enjoy it, friends. We will never have anyone like him again. We'll never see another president like him. He works 24/7. He loves helping the little people. Thank you, Lord, it says. Thank you, God. Another one. I love this man. I hang on every word. Thanks be to God. It's almost as if God sent him. It's almost as if God saved his life last summer, and then brought him back. Well, he did. It's prophesied. Now it's fulfilled prophecy. Now we're in the midst of a resurgence. Another one writes, you've got to love this president for his honest, simple, and straightforward values and principles. Another one, he's 100% correct. If someone can't make their first impression one of cleanliness, why should anyone believe the kitchen won't be any different? It's so nice, says someone else. It's so nice to have someone in the White House who has pride in the country and wants to see it shine again. Another one on the point about cleanliness and the front door and the kitchen says, cleanliness is next to godliness. A neat, orderly existence. God, of course, is the author of decency, order, structure, cleanliness. Another one here says, I've spent my entire adult life working in the D.C. metro area. Anyone that believes that the crime rate hasn't gone through the roof is simply fooling themselves. The mayor should welcome this help from Trump with open arms. They should welcome it. They should be saying thank you. Safety is returning to the streets of D.C. And then lastly, he's right. First impressions matter. If it looks dirty where the customers are, imagine how bad it is in the back. That's right. Yet another victory. I mean, the wind is at his back. He's claiming victories. Listen to this exchange also from Kudlow's program, clip 7.
They're going to meet. They're not going to meet as equals. Putin may not agree with what I've just written, but they are not equals. Trump is king of the hill right now. He's at the top of his game. And I think if Putin underestimates him and if Putin doesn't play ball with this, Putin and Russia are going to suffer big time. But you tell me, Ambassador, what do you think?
Well, Larry, listening to your riff, the only thing I could keep thinking about, the thing that was going through my head was Napoleon Bonaparte. We haven't seen an energetic executive on the world stage, overseas, and reordering the economy, reordering the education system, reordering Make America Healthy Again, taking back the cities. I mean, what President Trump is doing in America alone would make him the greatest president in history, potentially. But he's also overseas solving wars, India, Pakistan, Rwanda, Congo, places people don't even think about. But the difference between Trump and Napoleon, Larry, is Napoleon did it through force of arms. Mm. Trump is doing it through force of will, through his courageousness, his strength, and the strength of America. It's incredibly impressive.
These comments, of course, were made ahead of the summit in Alaska with Vladimir Putin that's supposed to take place later today. I saw a clip of Putin's plane landing in America. First time, as we wrote in the Trumpet brief this morning, I mean, first time Putin meets with a U.S. president since the war in Ukraine started several years ago. I'm sure that for all of his wins, I'm sure he's not going to be able to dial back Putin's, you know, ambitious agenda to build an empire, to rebuild an empire. But that said, I mean, you look at what President Trump's been able to accomplish in 7-8 months. It's impressive. A miracle victory. This is from the January issue of the Trumpet. Trump enters his second term with notably more power than he had in his first, or would have had he continued in 2021. I mean, think about if he would have continued, if they wouldn't have completed the election steal, he'd be done now. He'd be gone. As it is, he's back, and he's got 3+ years left. Maybe more if he runs for a third term. Let's not make heads explode in the Never Trump or Get Trump movements. It says here, it's truly a miracle. God has been protecting and empowering this man. So again, it's fulfilled prophecy. It is of God. Now the resurgence, it's not going to be permanent, as we've said over and again. It's not like we're getting behind one man or putting our trust or our faith in a man. God says, don't do that. Put your faith in God. But God does work through men. I read this morning in class, Paul said, follow me. You know, I'm a man. Follow me as I follow Christ. So you have to make sure you're following Christ if you're a leader for God. You have to do what Christ would do. You have to look at his example. You have to live the way he lived, or at least strive to. We're on a quest, as I said at orientation for the college. We're on a quest for perfection. Matthew 5:48, we have to seek it. We have to seek the kingdom. We have to seek God's righteousness. Bible prophecy says Donald Trump is going to lead a resurgence in America. Based on the scale of his victory, this resurgence could be significant and impressive. That's what we're seeing. It's pretty impressive. I mean, when have you seen this? Not in my lifetime. Maybe Reagan comes closest. You know, my father used to tell me, and my father was a great man. My father was a great man. He said, you better make sure that the front door is taken care of and clean before you go into the establishment. Washington, D.C. is the front door. I mean, those are words coming from a father-like figure. We're going to clean it up. There's no excuse. There's no excuse for this city, this capital city, to be overrun by teenage thugs. I'll get back to that in a second, the crime. We've been talking about that a lot this week. In another article, also from January, Trump 2.0 is shaking up the United States, but it's also sending reverberations around the globe, impacting friends and foes in every region. It's like Kudlow said there. I mean, this is the most popular, the most powerful man in the world right now. And he went against all the odds last year, including two assassination attempts. All the lawfare. Look at what Democrats did to try to destroy him. And, you know, as Victor Davis Hanson said, they're not going to take this line down. They're going to come back with another vicious wave of violence because they see that the Trump agenda is, it's successful. He's claiming victories. The stage is being set for civil war. We've got to be honest. We've got to give you the forecast, the biblical forecast, the prophetic forecast. It's right there in Ezekiel 4 and 5. This article says, by appointing Waltz, this is talking about the new administration as it was coming in January, and others such as Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, to lead the State Department and the Department of Defense, respectively, Trump may be showing that his comments about forcing Ukraine to give land and people to Russia were campaign bluster. He may be signaling an intent to challenge Russia's aggression more resolutely than before. It says, despite their words, the Russian leaders are likely uneasy about Trump's return and more so with each hawkish appointment he makes. That's from the January trumpet. And of course, today is the summit. We'll see what comes out from that. You listen to Trump recently and, you know, it doesn't sound like he's just overflowing with optimism. He said the other day that he'll probably have a pretty good understanding within a few minutes if there's any kind of deal to be made. This from the Morning Brief about the summit this afternoon. The stakes are high as Russia's president meets face to face with the U.S. president for the first time since before he invaded Ukraine. And it comes onto U.S. soil for the first time in a decade. Another momentous event. And again, if, as far as the war in Ukraine is concerned, it may not do anything. But it's yet another big event. One day he's talking about the dirty door that's Washington, D.C., and the next day he's in Alaska with Putin. Listen to Fox News, clip 6.
But President Trump thinks once he gets here, he'll be able to feel Putin out within 2 minutes.
I think it's going to be very interesting. We're going to find out where everybody stands, and I'll know within the first 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, or 5 minutes, like we tend to find out whether or not we're going to have a good meeting or a bad meeting. And if it's a bad meeting, it'll end very quickly. And if it's a good meeting, we're going to end up getting peace in the pretty near future.
Today, we may see something that hasn't happened since the last time Donald Trump was president. Before the Ukraine war, President Trump and President Putin standing side by side answering reporter questions, although the president is handicapping the chances of Putin passing on the Q&A at 1 out of 4.
This meeting sets up, it's like a chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. But there is a 25% chance that this meeting will not be a successful meeting, in which case, I will run the country, and we have made America great again already in 6 months. And at a minimum, I've calmed it way down.
The last time Putin met with the U.S. President, Joe Biden, in Switzerland in 2021, the sit-down did not defer Putin from invading Ukraine. President Trump now trying something completely different this term, including possibly pitching Russia's return to the G7, making it once again the G8. And there's been talk about land swaps, what Ukraine gets, what Russia gets, but this entire deal may ultimately hinge on rare earth minerals that exist beneath the ground here in Alaska. President Trump is expected to offer some kind of access in exchange for a ceasefire. As President Trump is now saying, this is not going to be the end of the war. They just need to figure out exactly what Russia needs to stop shooting, to stop trying to advance within Ukraine. Once they figure that out, and once there is a ceasefire, then they'll get Zelensky in, and then they'll figure out what he needs to go to the Ukrainian people with for a national referendum. This is just going to be President Trump trying to stop the killing. His big thing is that tens of thousands of people are dying every just since he took office. He wants that part to stop, and then they can figure out what the map is going to look like, the actual map, at the end of the war.
The White House is calling this a listening exercise. It is clear Putin has a lot to get off his chest. It is assumed he will be asking for all the land, some 20% of Ukraine in the south and east that they've managed to occupy in all this time of fighting, basically keeping the front line as it is and maybe more. It's been called a land swap, but according to some analysts, it's really a land grab, as Russia seems only willing to give up about 5% of what it has seized from Ukraine.
Russia wants to expand its empire. I saw a link at CFP where the Russian foreign minister showed up in Alaska today wearing his USSR shirt. They've always wanted to rebuild the Soviet empire. That's Putin's goal. That's his. Hopefully President Trump understands this going in. It's a land grab. And it seems like President Trump is fine with applying some pressure to Ukraine to see that Russia gets what it wants. We'll see what comes out from this. Pretty big event as the world turns. I mean, we're seeing huge personalities that are prophesied in scripture, including Putin. You've got the Jeroboam type, you've got the Prince of Rosh, and we've got all the literature to help you understand the sure word of Bible prophecy. As I've said, my father gave a program on that a week ago, and we've got some clips lined up later for today's show. If we have time. When we come back, though, we've got this week's installment of World Watch, so you don't want to miss that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily News. Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
Two Chinese nationals charged with smuggling tens of millions of dollars worth of microchips and other sensitive technology into China were arrested in California on August 2nd. Among the smuggled items were American-produced NVIDIA H100s, advanced chips that can train artificial intelligence. The export of advanced microchips and related technology from the United States was restricted in 2022 due to national security concerns. The two Chinese nationals are alleged to have knowingly exported this technology to China through their company ALX Solutions Incorporated without the required license or authorization from the U.S. Department of Commerce. The Bible prophesies that God would allow the fruit of America's labors to be stolen by its enemies as long as the country refuses to turn to God. To understand the prophetic significance of this theft, read China Steals U.S. Trade Secrets and Fulfills Bible Prophecy. Goods entering the U.S. from India will face a 50% tariff effective August 27th, President Donald Trump said August 6th. The announcement has added to growing tensions between the U.S. and India. In response to the imposed tariff, India is expected to pause a $3.6 billion deal to purchase Boeing jets from America, which the U.S. approved in 2021. India also halted plans to buy Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stryker combat vehicles from the U.S. and canceled its defense minister's planned visit to Washington this month. As India distances itself from the U.S., it is strengthening relations with Russia and China. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke on August 8th, committing to strengthening ties between their nations. Modi also invited Putin to visit India later this year. Negotiations are underway between China and India to expand bilateral trade by opening three border passes between their nations. Modi is also expected to make a landmark visit to China in late August. The Bible prophesies of an immense Asian alliance, which it calls the Kings of the East, headed by Russia and China. Scripture shows that India will be part of this conglomerate of Asian giants, which together will field an army of 200 million men. To learn more about the future of the relationship between these Asian powers, read Russia and China in Prophecy. The Associated Press published an article sympathetic to Hezbollah terrorists on August 6th, focusing on the quote-unquote survivors of Israel's pager attack. In September 2024, Israel detonated thousands of pagers belonging to Hezbollah terrorists. At least 30 terrorists were killed and over 3,000 were injured. Even though the victims are associated with a group whose goal is to exterminate Jews, the AP came to their defense in the new article. It even acknowledged that those interviewed were all Hezbollah officials or fighters or members of their families. Major Western media outlets defending proven terrorists is an indictment against the West's growing immorality. The press is reflecting and amplifying anti-Semitism and hatred for the Jewish state within Western nations. AP's article is another example of this ominous trend. To learn more about where this kind of open anti-Semitism will lead, read Jerusalem in Prophecy. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
President Trump just a little while ago said crime in here in Washington, D.C. is, quote, totally out of control. His words, I'm quoting once again, worse than ever. What's your response to that?
Well, we need to be able to call out the lie where it is. And that's just simply not true. He continues to say it, but it is not true. He's painted this dystopian vision, and it just doesn't track with the facts on the ground. Over the last 2 years, we have driven crime down by about 50% of violent crime. Now, listen, everybody will be the first to say any crime is one too many. And so we still have work to do. We still have progress. But that happens best with the coordination between the mayor, the council, the community, MPD, because that's what's gained and had the gains over the last several years. The federal law enforcement aspect, putting military members on the streets of our city, does not make us safer.
Yes, it does, actually. The statistics, well, crime is down. That's their story, and they're sticking to it. Meanwhile, you've got people in D.C. who are celebrating because there's safety on the streets now. Not as many carjackings, not as many robberies or murders. This woman at the Washington Examiner, she's giving her testimonial. She was attacked, sexually assaulted 5 years ago in D.C. on the streets in broad daylight. And she says you can't even find it among the crime statistics. A lot of the crimes, it's not that they just go unreported. They're not even recorded by the Metropolitan PD, the police department. It says if the public wants to have an honest conversation about crime in D.C., the MPD will first have to be honest about how prevalent crime is. Well, isn't that a sign of the times? You've got this skyrocketing crime, and then people going around, like you just heard there, saying, no, it's actually safe. There's actually no crime. It's actually lower than it was years ago. They lie. It says, without MPD's honesty about the crimes that it has chosen to hide from its public-facing stats page, the White House cannot get an accurate picture of how bad the problem actually is. So even the White House, even Trump's administration is handcuffed because of these dishonest, deceitful people working for law enforcement, of all things. It says here, it's just something that you have to live with if you're a D.C. resident. You took Ubers and Lyfts, told others if you were walking after dark so they knew when you were home and knew to be aware of your surroundings, almost to the point of paranoia. This woman says, on Saturday morning in 2020, I walked out of my apartment on Capitol Hill to mail a package at the post office. She says, I never made it to the post office. This is when she was attacked. In broad daylight and on a well-traveled 2nd Street Northeast next to the Union Station, I fought to get away as he sexually assaulted me. If it had not been for others in the vicinity, including a construction worker who heard my screaming and ran to my rescue, I don't know if I'd be here today. I don't know if I'd still be alive. She says my attacker was arrested on the street months later, charged and pleaded guilty to a sex abuse charge nearly 2 years later. MPD's crime card's online statistics page omits mentioning it, though, you see? Do you know what that communicates to a victim? How invalidating that is? It's not even mentioned. The sex offender just gets away with it, a slap on the wrist. It says, when I asked MPD in 2020 why my incident was not on its crime map, an MPD spokesman said the city only includes first degree felonies under its crime stats. That would mean that for every person robbed, assaulted, or sexually abused in anything less than egregious ways, you have not been counted into the total tally. See, it's just too minor for us to calculate, for us to add to the tally. It's kind of like the shoplifting in California. Well, I mean, as long as it's under $1,000, just give them a slap on the wrist and let them get away with it. This is why they lock up toothpaste and toiletries at drugstores in D.C. and in San Francisco. It's madness. The left and out-of-touch elite reporters have purported this week that things are fine in Washington because crime is trending down, while the right has maintained that the Metropolitan Police Department statistics have been manipulated to paint a rosier picture of the situation. Turns out it's actually worse than they knew. It's even worse. She talks again about her attacker. Police arrested him, but he was immediately released from jail by the judge who presided over the case. The assistant U.S. attorney who prosecuted my case told me it was to keep the D.C. jail from overcrowding. Yeah, it's crowded in jail. Yeah. And, of course, they had to, as you come into 2021, you've got to make room for all the January 6 protesters. They sent them to dozens and dozens, I think over hundreds, to the D.C. jail. Now, that's a serious crime. Protesting on January 6th. But this, I mean, it's not serious enough for him to go to jail. He can attack, but I mean, if it's not full-on rape, then, you know, it's a slap on the wrist. We can't have a jail that's overcrowded. And she talks about the press, for their part, defending the criminal. You heard in World Watch, they're defending Hezbollah. What is wrong with these people? They're highly educated at Columbia University or wherever they go to get their journalist credentials. And then they come out and they immediately start siding with Hezbollah and the criminals in D.C. Are you serious? This is what they're educated to do. They're trained. The U.S. Attorney's Office would inform me through mail notification and phone calls of updates to my case. He was arrested in 5 separate incidents. This is her attacker. After being released and after each arrest, the judge permitted his immediate release even when he was caught in public with a machete. So all the judges, the bleeding heart liberals, they just let the guy return to the streets. And so he keeps committing crimes. And it's the same mentality that you see in picking on Israel. Just give Hezbollah a pass. Give Hamas a pass. It's not serious enough. October 7 was not serious enough. It certainly doesn't rise to the level of what Israel's doing in Gaza at the moment. You see how the game is played? The attack. The sickness from within. Isaiah 1. Head to toe. listen to Douglas Murray as he's talking about just the level of self-hatred and the accusers of Israel really being guilty of what they accuse you of or what they accuse Israel of. This is clip 9.
And you know, there's this phrase I've tried to make a bit more well known in the last year. Vasily Grossman, the great Soviet Jewish writer of the 20th century, he said once. He said about anti-Semitism. He says, "Tell me what you accuse the Jews of, and I'll tell you what you're guilty of." Wow. Now, the people claiming that Israel is committing genocide are people who want to commit genocide. The Iranians, the Revolutionary Islamic Government in Tehran and all of its proxies, they accuse Israel of colonialism. It is the mullahs who are colonialists as we speak. They've been colonizing for decades. They've colonized Iraq, they've colonized Lebanon, they've colonized Yemen, they've colonized Syria. They dare to accuse Israel of colonialism. Every time this rule of Vasily Grossman's holds, what they accuse Israel of, they are guilty of. When Hamas say Israel is committing genocide, it's because Hamas wants to commit genocide. So this is a cast iron rule.
We had a trumpet brief go out yesterday about the two wars that Bibi has to fight, one against terrorists and then one against his own country, one against the ruling class, the elites in Israel, the journalists, the left-wing judges. Mr. Hilliker was saying yesterday that, you know, throughout this war, I mean, Bibi Netanyahu has spent a lot of time inside of a courtroom. I mean, we understand this here in America. Look at how much time Donald Trump had to spend in a courtroom last year while he's trying to run for office. He's trying to run for president. The radical left doesn't think anything of that. No, it's part of the grand plan, the strategy to destroy the opponent, the opposition. He quotes a Daily Mail article, reveals that Israeli Prime Minister's astonishing determination not to allow the legal circus to which he's being subjected to prevent him from defending his nation. Gadi Taub talked about just how relentless Bibi Netanyahu is and how much energy he has. I mean, he's had surgery recently for cancer. But in the case of, you know, the attack on Iran a while back, I mean, he pulled an all-nighter. He did everything he could to preserve, you know, the surprise element to the attack. And then he's having to go in and out of a courtroom during the day. The level of self-hatred that you see, particularly among the ruling class, the highly educated, the elites, whether in Israel or here in America. Douglas Murray touches on the university system and just the indoctrination that so many young people are subjected to. Listen to clip 10.
In your opinion, what is the biggest threat on democratic countries in the world?
I would say that it's in part the radicalization of young people into vicious belief systems and lies. I think of people like the idiot students in America. How come we're in this situation? It's like what I said about people not being able to identify the Nazis today. And I tell you, by the way, very quickly where it comes from. It comes from a taught self-loathing. It's a taught self-loathing. One of the things I love about Israel is, in spite of all of, again, all the internal debates, much of which I hear over Friday night dinners and other dinners, you know, fundamentally, Israelis believe in the state of Israel. And I remember some years ago, shortly before his death, Henry Kissinger and I were talking, and I just came across it in one of my notebooks the other day, a note I made to myself that Henry said, you were talking about America and American education. He said, it's not clear to me that a country that hates its past has any future. And I think that's absolutely right. And I want to turn that around. And it's one of my self-appointed tasks to try to help do so. I want the West to be proud of itself. I want people to realize when they're growing up in countries like America and Britain that we have been great forces for good in the world. We've done bad things, but everybody does. But on balance, we're a force for good.
Imagine that, you know, an educated individual that says, hey, you should love your country. I think he's at Nova, by the way, just looking at the background there. We visited that site, as I say, it's turned into a shrine, a memorial for all the people that were slaughtered that day, October 7. But here he is talking about the vicious hatred, the self-loathing. Quoting Kissinger, it's not clear to me that a country that hates its past has any future. I mean, if we hate ourselves, if we hate our founding, if we hate our founders, what does it say about our future? What does it say about Israel's future? In those interviews we had over in Israel, whether it was Michael Oren or Gadi Taab, I mean, both of them said it was division at home that opened the way for Hamas to attack. We can't even unify around a common cause because there's so much self-loathing. You know, those comments underneath the Trump quote, the Trump clip that I read to you at the start of the show, a lot of it's just fueled by people who see someone who's in office who loves his country. It's unusual to see that. And they're praising Trump. I mean, we've never had anyone like him. There will never be anyone else like him. We're so used to the self-loathing. Look at Obama, who recently praised those Democrats for breaking the law, leaving Texas, just to try to keep Texas, you know, the Texas Congress from doing its job, what they're voted in to do. And Obama, man, he likes insurrections. Oh, yes, he likes division. I mean, you've got to protest with some violence or else nobody's going to notice. And then when there's a protest where there isn't violence, they make it up. No, there's no one as dangerous as a Trump supporter. I mean, you've heard that like on an endless loop over the last several years. Self-loathing. The Daily Mail said this: if he was interrogated from 8 to 12 or noon, at 12:30, Netanyahu would meet the U.S. Secretary of State. He doesn't care. It's as if it's someone else's trial. That's how he works. He's only focused on the relevant target. I mean, if he has to go into court, okay, but the fact that he can maintain his focus and keep going forward, that's another rising lion leader in the world today. There aren't that many of them. we should appreciate the good qualities when we see them. Now, there's a lot of weakness and sickness as well. The resurgence is short term as well. There are flaws. Douglas Murray says even with our countries, of course there are flaws. Every country makes mistakes. But the self-loathing, if we hate our past, what future do we have? You can see it all building to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You can see what a good leader, there aren't that many, but you can see what he's going up against. Listen to Bibi Netanyahu. This is, I think, from last week, clip 14.
But if I had to run the country based on these vilifications, you know, I shouldn't be here. Because leaders should do what is right and what will withstand the test of time. And what will withstand the test of time is that in an hour of peril, Israel didn't slumber like other democracies often do. In the face of this challenge to our existence, we took on a seven-front war, won it, and secured the peace and expanded the peace after this victory, expanding the Abraham Accords, creating a different Middle East. That's what we're in the process of doing. The last part is hard, but it's doable, and we'll do it.
He's largely right about creating a different Middle East. You look at what's happened in the last 2 years. But again, we can't just overlook what led up to October 7th and how the division, the strife internally, the self-loathing, it left Israel vulnerable. And that's what happens to the United States. It's leaving us vulnerable to an attack. This is Bibi talking about that fake photograph that went around, the sickly, emaciated baby. They took a picture of him in what, a Qatar, Yemen. And then the New York Times, I mean, they ran with it. They're leading the way in self-loathing. You want to talk about vicious belief systems? It's right there in the newsrooms, whether it's in Tel Aviv or in New York City. Listen to Bibi talking about the Times. This is moving ahead to number 17.
Unfortunately, the New York Times and others, New York Times should be sued. I'm actually looking at whether a country can sue the New York Times, and I'm looking into it right now because I think it's such clear defamation. I mean, you put a picture of a child that's supposed to then represent all these supposedly starving children, yet they put in this picture of a child who has cerebral palsy, that they took another picture somewhere else in other media, a child who had cystic fibrosis, got nothing to do with starvation, or another child that we actually sent to Italy to be cured.
Yeah, just like Sinwar, you know, the butcher, the one that Israel traded for Shalit back in, what was it, 2011? I mean, Israel's there intervening to save the guy from brain cancer. And then as a matter of thanks, I guess, Sinwar goes, he's released from prison, serving four life terms. He's released from prison, and then he goes and becomes the mastermind for October 7. It's exactly the opposite the way the newsrooms report things. The madman, or men, they want to exterminate Jews. Tell me what you accuse the Jews of, and I'll tell you what you're guilty of yourself. At Tablet, Hamas is winning the culture war. The furious torrent of lies and manipulations emerging from Gaza should surprise no one. This is Hamas's Battle of Berlin, and the terrorists are winning. How could this happen? To our own nations. How could so many newsrooms get it so wrong? Just look at the image of Avatar David, who was kidnapped from the Nova Festival, crouching in a tunnel, emaciated and forced to dig his own grave. We showed you that clip a week or two ago. It's no coincidence that Hamas brazenly chose to publish photographs of the skeletal Jewish prisoners. It is deliberately starving in its war tunnels after a week of successfully marketing its blood libel about how the IDF is starving Gazans. They're winning, you see? The pictures circulate, they go right around the world, and then the actual starvation, Hamas proudly shows it to the world. And I guess the New York Times just turns a blind eye to it. It's like it's not even happening. Kind of like the crime in D.C., well, it's not that serious, so we won't even calculate it into the statistics. It says, for weeks, the terrorist group passed off photographs of people suffering from genetic disorders as evidence of Israeli cruelty. At the same time, it prevented ample aid supplies from reaching those very people by hijacking more than 90% of UN aid trucks, selling family aid packages which enter Gaza for free at insane markups, and shooting into crowds of people trying to access aid provided by a US-backed humanitarian consortium. You know all this. I mean, you've watched this program enough to know about the lies and the deception. It just permeates the air. It says here, what's new is how brazenly Hamas is doing it and how avidly European presidents, editors, intellectuals, activists, and even some Jews are closing their eyes and their ears and going along for the ride, parroting the Hamas propaganda line like toddlers. It makes me think of 2 Timothy 4, where Paul told Timothy, I mean, this was his final charge to the evangelists, preach the word, preach the truth. Because the time is coming when people are going to have the itching ears and they're not going to want to hear the truth. They're going to want to hear smooth things. Or in the case of this, they're going to want to hear a good message of Jew hatred. Accuse the Jews of what you're actually aiming to do. Exterminate all the Jews. It's the devil. It's a strategy. It says here, the point of the photographs was to provide onlookers with a fig leaf of an excuse to embrace the narrative of a terrorist organization whose aims are, in fact, openly genocidal. They are open about it. They are proud of it. They will film it if they can and then distribute it. It says here, Israel's not fighting against Hamas, a small and malicious terror group tyrannically oppressing its own population. Israel is at war with the Palestinian people who have adopted the 20th century political program of replacing the Jewish nation state of Israel through whatever combination of violent and peaceful means and assuming whatever form of sovereignty there. It says here, we know this from the accounts of hostages who were held by civilians as slaves, forced to cook and clean and serve entire families while small children and elderly women alike mocked them and added to their suffering. We've got testimonials. We've got footage. We've got proof. And people ignore it. Says here, we know this from the accounts of October 7, 2023, showing that the majority of the ghouls who entered Israel to pillage, murder, and rape weren't members of highly trained terror units, but ordinary Gazans who relished at the opportunity to inflict pain and suffering on Jews next door. This is what Israel's at war against. This is what Israel's fighting. And then they're also fighting against editors and journalists in the newsrooms as well. It says, and we know this finally from the stories of IDF soldiers returning from Gaza and reporting that every home in the Strip, more or less, prominently features a photograph of Jerusalem emblazoned with the promise to erase the Zionist presence there. Isn't that a wonderful sentiment? Not just among the 25,000 or so hardcore Hamas terrorists, but just ordinary Palestinian families, people. We look forward to a time when Jerusalem will finally be cleansed of the Jews. They're taught this. These vicious forms of hatred and Jew hatred. They're taught it in schools. It's on Palestinian television. It's blared over the airwaves. They're proud of it. They're proud of their hatred of Jews. They get excited when they kill Jews. You know all about that from October 7. Thousands upon thousands just poured across the border a little less than 2 years ago, and they raped and they pillaged and they murdered. And now it's as if all those crime statistics have been erased. And it's Israel. It's Israel who's guilty of genocide. That's all we have time for on today's show. Sorry to end on a little bit of a downer there, but that's the truth. This is the world we live in. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting, the Trumpet Daily. That's what this program is. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today. Thank you, in some cases, for joining us all week long. And we'll see you next time.